let's talk about is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening.
Well, that was fast. Last week on the hockey show, I mentioned that this week's episode of Let's Talk About was going to be about the Ontario government's use of the notwithstanding clause, Section 33 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and the implications of that, and basically looking at what that piece of legislation or that piece of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms says, how it was applied, and how it violated and is structured so it is permissible to violate, at least from a legal perspective, certain charter rights, and what specific charter rights and what where unions and strikes and collective bargaining sit within the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, because they are enshrined in the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms through legal precedent. But as of today, I'm recording this on Monday, obviously, but at 6 o'clock in the morning today, CBC published an article, and the report is that QP is going to end its strike and its education workers' strike and education walkout. And the Ford government is promising to repeal Bill 28, which enforced and forced a contract on education workers and that union, imposed a contract on them to basically circumvent collective bargaining because the union wanted raises and protections and all these other things part of the collective bargaining process, right? The two sides come together, the union bargains on behalf of the workers, and the company, in this case the Ontario government, negotiates on their behalf, and you come to an agreement where you hopefully meet in the middle, and both sides get something out of it. But the Ontario government decided not to do that, and through Bill 28 attempted to force a contract on QP, using the notwithstanding clause to violate charter rights. Specifically, as we're going to get into, Section 2D of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So people have been throwing around the title of the notwithstanding clause. People don't really know what it is. If you watched or you listened to my series Exploring the Charter, it was one of the later episodes, because the notwithstanding clause exists within the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and it is Section 33. Because the notwithstanding clause exists to put constraints and override sections of the provisions within the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, it's written within the Charter of Rights and Freedoms itself. So you can look at one document and see, these are our rights, and very plainly, these are the ways in which it can be constrained or altered. that's just good document practice, honestly. But I'm going to get into what Section 33 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms is, what it says, and how it's been applied in the past, and why Canada sits kind of in a unique position in terms of other constitutional democracies, because, spoiler alert, other constitutional democracies don't have this. They don't have a mechanism by which the government can violate your rights and freedoms, just like straight up. Obviously, what we need to talk about first is actually earlier in the beginning of the section, the beginning section of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and that's Section 1, which refers to the Reasonable Limits Clause. So this provision, what it states is, the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms guarantees the rights and freedoms set out in it, subject only to such reasonable limits prescribed by law as can be demonstrably justified in a free and democratic society. Now, this is the clause that is used to kind of guide a lot of, in times where rights need to be suspended, usually it's done in a way that is done in the national interest in an emergency situation. There are certain situations, some parts that need to be, some freedoms that need to be limited in order to have a functioning free democratic society. You know, the idea that your rights have a limit. They extend only so far because your rights can't violate, the extension of your rights can't violate the rights of another person. You know, I can't, through expression of my charter rights, can't impose, impede, or derogate your charter rights. That's just how you exist in a society. You need to have limits on terms of, you know, your rights are not absolute. They have limits. If you think about this idea, you know, there are sections like mobility rights, which aren't like completely limitless. There are, you know, courts, open courts, since that's Section 14 of the International Convention of Civil and Political Rights, where courts should be open. Well, in Canada, that's limited because in court cases involving children, there can be publication bans imposed. Or, you know, generally in certain trials, you can ask for a publication ban. So the court can't actually be open. Freedom of association, you know, there are provisions in there that you can be associated with somebody who's done something. You know, you can't be, the idea that, you know, if somebody, you're in a car with somebody and you pick up a friend and you get pulled over because your friend robbed a 7-Eleven. Well, you would still be charged as an accessory to that because you're driving that friend away from a crime scene unknowingly, and that would be, you'd be, you know, it would come down to, you know, the court and all of that. But there are limits to that right. One of the biggest ones being the functioning of our prison system. Your freedom of movement and your right, you know, your mobility rights and your freedom, your security of the person, your right to privacy, your right, you know, freedom, security of the person. I mentioned that already. But in order to maintain a democratic society, we need to have a functioning, we want to have a functioning prison system. We want to, as Canadians say, there are certain people who their right to their fundamental freedoms have to be constrained, and they have to be put in a place and be punished for the things that they've done, sometimes permanently. People with life sentences, technically you're violating that person's right, mobility rights, because it's the government who is limiting where they can go within Canada and their ability to leave Canada. So we have limits in terms of what, how far your rights can go. The notwithstanding clause takes that a step further, because the reasonable limits clause constrains rights. It limits the them. It doesn't stop them. It doesn't get rid of them, as term is derogate. but it limits them. It sets a barrier and says your rights only go this far. So we can maintain this society we have. The notwithstanding clause is section 33 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And I'm going to start throwing some charter, some legalese at you. So bear with me. I'll explain what it means after. But here we go. So section 33, subsection 1 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Parliament or the legislature of a province may expressly declare in an act of parliament or of the legislature, as the case may be, that the act or a provision thereof shall operate notwithstanding a provision included in section 2 or section 7 to 15 of this charter. Subsection 2, an act or a provision of an act in respect of which a declaration made under this section is in effect shall have such operation as it would but for the provision of the charter referred to in this declaration. So what this says is that by exercising the notwithstanding clause, you can put through an act of parliament or an act of the legislature, so a bill that can operate notwithstanding a provision included in sections 2 or 7 to 15. 2 is your fundamental rights. 7 to 15 is your legal rights. It cannot be used in anything else. So it can be used to derogate from certain sections of the charter, section 2, which is your fundamental freedom, section 7 to 14, which is your legal rights, and section 15, which is your equality rights. It cannot be applied to section 3, which is the right to vote. There is no way, there is no provision and no law that can limit Canadians' right to vote. Sections 4 and 5, which is sitting of House and Commons or other Canadian legislatures, those are the limits that are placed in the operation of our government and the length of parliaments and legislatures, that is enshrined in our rights. Like, a government has to have a certain endpoint, and there's a certain minimum that they have to meet in order for them to, you know, be legitimate. You cannot, obviously, because we live in a democracy, you cannot use the notwithstanding clause to override the limit that says that a government lasts 4 years, like a legislature or a parliament lasts 4 years. You can't just go in and use the notwithstanding clause to say, just kidding, this party is infinite. That's how you get, like, you know, Putin. Also, your mobility rights and your language rights, so section 6 and sections 16 to 23 cannot be derogated via the notwithstanding clause. So what that means is that sections 2, 7 to 14 and section 15 can, through an act of parliament or legislature, be restricted. They can legally be restricted by the government by putting and, you know, exercising the notwithstanding clause. There is at least one limit on this power outside of what section of the charter can be held notwithstanding. It is the fact that subsection 3, so section 33, subsection 3, a declaration made under section 1, of section 33, shall cease to have effect 5 years after it comes into force or on such earlier date as may be specified in the declaration. Section 4, Parliament or the legislature of a province may reenact a declaration made under section 1. And then section 5, section 3 applies in respect of a reenactment made under section 4. So section 3, there is a 5-year limit if you put through an act or bill, an act of parliament or legislature that operates notwithstanding a provision of sections 2, 7 to 15 of the charter. That can only last a maximum of 5 years, and then it can be renewed under section 33, subsection 4, or earlier. You can set a limit and say, like, oh, in 2 years, this is over. So effectively, what the Ford government could have done is they put through Bill 28, and that lasts for 5 years, and after 5 years, that bill is now no longer under the purview of Section 33 the notwithstanding clause and can be challenged. Or they can set it an earlier date. They could just put it to a year. They could put it to the end of the Ford government, and he can shift the problem later. He can shift the problem to the next government, potentially. And then just Section 5, it's just the little like legal thing that you need. You just need that circular logic where it's like, if you use Section 4 to reenact a declaration made under Section 1, so you renew that five-year limit or whatever limit you put on, and then the timer starts ticking again, Section 33, subsection 5 means you go right back to subsection 3 and say it can only last 5 years or less. It's just a bit of circular logic there. But this is publicly available. It's on the Justice Canada website, their whole breakdown of and you know the availability of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It's on the internet. You can find it. It's great. They have a similar provision section where they look at other countries and see what is this law similar to, or this provision in the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms similar to in other jurisdictions. I'm just going to read it, and you can take from it whatever you want. Quote, Section 33 is unique among the constitutions of countries with conditional democracies. However, certain individual human rights conventions contain more limited notwithstanding clauses. Article 4 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which is legally binding on Canada, contains a notwithstanding clause. Article 27 of the American Convention on Human Rights and Article 15 of the European Convention on Human Rights include notwithstanding clauses. Though they're not legally binding on Canada because Canada is not a part of America or Europe. But that's three. Canada, the U.S., and Europe, the European Union, have notwithstanding clauses. This is not a common thing. It's not a common thing for governments to just have this little window open where they can pop their head in and say, hey, your rights and freedoms can go bleep themselves for 5 years. Not many other countries have that. So Canada's very unique in that measure. But thankfully, it hasn't been used very often. So as it stands, since the notwithstanding clause was written into the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, to date, the federal government has never invoked the notwithstanding clause. They have threatened to do so. I believe Justin Trudeau threatened to do so. They've threatened to do so, but they never actually have used the notwithstanding clause. Usually when the notwithstanding clause gets brought up in any context, whether it's a provincial legislature, provincial parliament, or the federal parliament, there's a lot of backlash, deservedly so, because it's a very controversial thing that realistically should almost never be used. I can't think of a reason why the notwithstanding clause, like why the government should have the power to just temporarily override rights and freedoms. The reasonable limits clause is important because it allows us to be a little bit more agile and adaptable to certain scenarios. Rights were curtailed during the COVID-19 pandemic and shifted in different ways in order to attempt to maintain the security of the country and the health of the populace. But nothing was ever completely removed. You know, people's rights weren't completely ever removed. And before you say people weren't allowed to leave the country if they weren't vaccinated, that's not true. People weren't allowed to leave their provinces. That's also not true. It's just you weren't allowed to the privilege of flying on a plane. And also, you can have the right to leave the country, but you don't have the right to just enter another country. They get to decide who gets in. Just like the Canadian government decides who comes into Canada, the American government and the English government and every other government on earth decides who goes in. If I wanted to go to North Korea right now, they would probably tell me, no, you can't come into our country. I'm legally allowed to leave Canada. I'm not legally allowed to enter North Korea. But anyway, back to the government website, Section 33 has been invoked on occasion by provincial governments. The clause was first invoked in 1982 when Quebec passed an omnibus enactment that repealed all pre-charter legislation and reenacted it with the addition of a standard clause that declared the legislation to operate notwithstanding Section 2 and Section 7 to 15 of the Charter. The legislation also inserted the standard clause into all post-charter enactments. The declaration in the omnibus legislation purported to have retroactive effect on April 17, 1982. This omnibus legislation was the subject of the decision in Ford Supra. It was not reenacted when it expired. And then finally, Saskatchewan, the Yukon, Ontario, and Alberta have all also made Section 33 declarations. Not all of the laws in which these declarations were made were brought into force. I believe Bill 28 falls under this because it kind of it was on the books for 2 days if it is actually repealed. But if we turn to Bill 28 and we turn to the current situation in Ontario, hopefully by the time you're listening to this, it's officially over and they're back to the bargaining table. The strike is still going on, but they're back to the bargaining table at least. What Bill 28 did is that it derogated from Section 2, Subsection D of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And that is the provision, the part of the Fundamental Freedoms, Section 2, that is Subsection D, Freedom of Association. And just moving forward, if I ever say derogate again, it means to detract from or deviate from. That's kind of what that means. So what does Section 2, Subsection B actually, what's the purpose of this statement in the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms? Well, freedom of association is intended to recognize the profoundly social nature of human endeavors and to protect the individual from state-enforced isolation in the pursuit of their ends. It protects the collective action of individuals in pursuit of their common goals. It functions to protect individuals against more powerful entities, thus empowering vulnerable groups and helping them work to right imbalances in society, and it allows the achievement of individual potential through interpersonal relationships and collective action. So it allows people to come together and be the whole rather than the sum of their parts. The very clear example of that currently is unions. The government cannot impose upon us any restrictions with respect to unions. You cannot stop people from unionizing. The government can't stop you from unionizing. They can't stop collective bargaining. They can't stop unions from acting or doing anything. In a broader context, it prevents the government from cracking down on groups that are freely associating. If you think of how collectivization of action in Indigenous groups, how their freedom of association, because they were technically under different rules and different laws, they didn't have freedom of association in the way that we do in terms of, you know, getting together and acting as a political force or as a social force. Their community, their culture was derogated by the Canadian government. They had restrictions imposed on their freedom of association. But what this means more specifically is in this case is the right to or provisions for trade union activities, including collective bargaining and striking. So once again, directly from the horse's mouth, from the government, the freedom to organize an employee association lies at the heart of the protection of freedom of association. This is Dunmore Supra, paragraph 37. That's where you can find the case law for it. Freedom of association guarantees the rights of employees to meaningfully associate in the pursuit of collective workplace goals, which includes a right to collective bargaining. That right is one that guarantees a process but does not guarantee an outcome or access to a particular model of labor relations. The right to a process of collective bargaining means that employees have the right to unite, to present demands to the employer collectively, and to engage in discussions in an attempt to achieve workplace-related goals. It imposes duties on the government employers. You know, that's the government of provinces or the federal government. So it imposes duties on government employers to agree to meet and discuss with employees who have presented demands collectively to the employer. It also places constraints on the exercise of legislative powers in respect to the right to collectively bargain. A meaningful process of collective bargaining also requires the ability of employees to participate in the collective withdrawal of services, i.e. to strike, where good faith negotiations break down. That right there is what happened in Ontario, because the government, their final offer, they pulled a move out of Gary Bettman's book. And if you haven't listened to the wonderful Agent Provocateur podcast with Alan Walsh, his discussion of the actual like labor strike in the NHL and the lockout, the Ontario government just pulled a Gary Bettman here, where, you know, what he did in order to enact a lockout was that in the last meeting, the last time that the two sides could present offers before a lockout was called, the NHL, via Gary Bettman, produced an offer that was so horrible and so unthinkable that no player would ever accept it. And what the government of Ontario did with the employee, with QP, was that they produced an offer that was actually worse than the first offer that they had given QP, basically forcing them to try and take the bad option. And when they didn't, they enacted and forced on them a contract. So the good faith negotiations broke down when the government said, this worse offer than the first one we gave you is the last offer we're getting. We're not talking anymore. You either accept it or we're going to force this contract on you. That's good faith negotiations breaking down. So in concluding that freedom of association includes the right to a meaningful collective bargaining process, which in turn includes the right to strike, the court has explicitly overturned the labor trilogy, as well as PIP, SH, Supra, Delisle Supra, and the conclusion in Dunmore Supra that Section 2D does not protect collective bargaining. So there's been a reversal in these those trilogy of decisions, of legal decisions, have been overturned by the Supreme Court. So here's the kicker. Here's what I will leave you with. In determining whether the right to a process of collective bargaining has been infringed, the courts assess whether the measure disrupts the balance of power between employees and employer necessary to ensure the meaningful pursuit of workplace goals so as to, quote, substantially interfere, unquote, with meaningful collective bargaining. Such disruption can occur in many ways, including restrictions on the subjects that may be discussed, the imposition of arbitrary outcomes, banning recourse to collective action without countervailing protection, making employee workplace goals impossible to achieve, or establishing a process which employees cannot effectively control or influence. The imposition of arbitrary outcomes. Sound familiar? The unfortunate thing is with the notwithstanding clause, they couldn't challenge Bill 28 on the merits of the sections that it derogates from. They had to challenge it on the application of Section 33. So QP's strike turned into a political protest, and now we're here with seemingly the Ford government blinking first. Probably, as Sid Sixero pointed out on Breakfast Television in Toronto, he got some very angry calls from some very rich donors, and that forced the government back to the bargaining table. All right, so that'll do it for this episode. Thank you very much for listening. I've been Jason. You've been the audience. If you're listening live at 101.5 UMFM, keep that dial to 101.5. We've got some great songs, great shows coming up right after this one. If you're listening on Spotify, thank you very much for listening. Thank you much for your download. You can catch me this Thursday on The Hockey Show with Teebs, 5:30 to 6:30. See you then. And as always, have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week. Drive safe, everybody. It's icy.